Welcome to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station. KDVS programming is also heard throughout the world on kdvs.org. Point your browser at this station's website and click on Listen Now. You can hear the live flash audio stream of this show and hear archives by pointing your browser at the schedule and choosing whatever program you wish. My name is Dr. Andy, and I'm the host of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, heard every Wednesday afternoon from 5 until 6 on this radio station, as has been the case for a decade now. I've got two great guests to introduce you to this afternoon. Amelia Grace is an internationally published poet and English instructor who, like my wife, was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Only Amelia Grace stuck around. She was raised in Milwaukee. She's just finished her MFA in poetry and creative writing. And in 2009, she returned home from a couple years in Taipei, teaching ESL to Taiwanese university students. Coincidentally, our second guest, the guest who will join us about 4:35 this afternoon, will be Eric Crowell. Eric Crowell is a graduate from UC Davis with a BA in English. Full disclosure, former student of Dr. Andy's. He graduated from UC Davis with a degree in English with an emphasis in creative writing, and he usually writes fiction, but he's been known to dabble in poetry now and then. For the past year, he's been living and working as an English teacher in Seoul, South Korea, which I believe is the largest city by population in the world, Seoul, South Korea. Eric Crowell's work tends to revolve around his family, around individuals who encounter terrible mishaps, usually involving, and I'm editorializing now, love relationships that just don't work out. Well, Amelia Grace will be on the lifeline in a moment from Milwaukee, and then in the second half hour, from Sacramento, Eric Crowell. That and some jazz, some recorded poems, and other surprises, all the things that you've come to expect from Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back with Amelia Grace. Thank you. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS. Big fans of National Public Radio's All Things Considered will be thrilled to know that later on in this program, I will be giving away two tickets to see Michelle Norris, the co-host of All Things Considered, when she speaks at the Crest Theater on October 6th. That's a week from tonight. So, if that's you, if you're an NPR junkie, if you'd like to see Michelle Norris, the great journalist and interviewer herself, a week from tonight in Sacramento, well, stick around, because sometime in the 5:30 to 6 portion of this program, I'll be giving away those tickets. My first guest this afternoon is Amelia Grace. Amelia Grace is an internationally published poet and English instructor who, as I mentioned before, was born and raised in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and who's just finished her MFA in poetry and creative writing. In 2009, she returned home from a few years of teaching in Taipei, Taiwan, teaching ESL to Taiwanese university students. And having taught and worked both stateside and abroad, Amelia brings a wealth of teaching and international experience to her work, including having lived in India, Taiwan, Europe, and Canada, plus many corners of the United States. She is an identical twin, and both she and her sister were diagnosed with type 1 diabetes in childhood. She just marked her 21st complication-free year with diabetes. She's a fierce diabetes advocate and active member of the online community. She writes a column for Health Central, and her blog, One Type One, was one of the first of its kind at Diabetes Daily. Her family created the nonprofit organization, the Ray of Hope Foundation, which helps raise money for diabetes awareness, research, and a cure. I'm very pleased that I can now introduce all of you to Amelia Grace. Amelia, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here, or, you know.
Well, we're in two places. Yes. But we should quickly mention that it's already dark where you are in Wisconsin, but you're getting ready to enjoy a musical concert.
That's right. That's right. It is dark. It's only 7 o'clock, and already the sky is that color of blue that happens, you know, at the end of day. But, actually, I'm going to see Justin Vernon, who's from Wisconsin, so I'm excited about that.
Excellent.
It should be a good concert.
Well, tell me a little bit about your life as a poet. I'm very much interested in the philanthropic work you do on behalf of diabetes awareness. And yet, you're a poet at the same time, recently having completed your MFA in poetry and creative writing. So do you have problems with juggling all of these hats, all of these responsibilities, both to be responsible and creative?
Well, I do and I don't. I feel like if you want to do something, you find a way to do it and you carve out the time that you need in order to, you know, prioritize the things in your life that are important to you. And, you know, the funny thing is, I'm from Milwaukee, but my time in Taipei, I've lived overseas. Like, I lived in Europe before, I lived in Germany, and I thought that I knew what it was like to be in another place and feel all the feelings that go with being an outsider. But there was something particular about my experience in Taiwan, and I felt very much like not a part of things. And as a type 1 diabetic, I mean, I don't want to get into it too much, but it was really challenging for me, like eating out all the time. My apartment didn't have a kitchen. And I started to talk about my life and my diabetes for the first time in my life. And that's sort of the catalyst for my renewed interest in poetry and writing. And I really do attribute it to that time in Taiwan where I was struggling with my place in the world and, you know, my blood sugars were crazy. And I looked to the internet for for help and support. And I was always sort of shy about sharing that part of myself. I don't know why I felt shame about it, but I just kind of did. And writing about it really helped to free up that part of me that, you know, that felt ashamed or embarrassed or, you know, just wasn't, I'm a very open person, but that I kept to myself. And so it was sort of a culmination of things. And so I started to talk about it for the first time. Like, I wrote a blog. I thought, oh, this is good. My family and my friends in America, they can see my life in Taiwan.
Right.
And what it turned into was talking about my struggles with type 1 diabetes and my place in the world. And I had sort of like stopped journaling, stopped writing. It was like the more that I learned, the more I realized how limited I was, which sounds sort of silly, but, you know, that feeling of like the smarter you get, you realize how little you really know.
Right.
It was something like that. And I really think without that experience in Taiwan, I don't think I would have pursued my MFA. I don't know how my life would have gone, but that was kind of the catalyst for getting it all started again. And it is difficult to juggle at times, but I think that, like anything in life, if you feel a passion for it and you feel called to do it, you just find ways to make it work. And I kind of resist, like, a firm schedule and like, issues with authority, so it's been, you know, a struggle in my life in some ways to tell myself, like, to do this every day. But I found that once I had a system for things and I carved out the time, that the rest of it followed.
A system certainly very important for an artist. Some would say that it's an artist's responsibility to recognize patterns and to make connections. But
and I mean, I don't know if listeners will identify with this or not, but as a type 1 diabetic, you know, I mean, it's an autoimmune disease. I got it when I was a child. And from a young age on, I had to follow, like, a strict regime of, like, you eat at this time, you take your insulin injections twice a day at this time, you test your blood sugar now, you know?
Right.
So when it came to other things in my life where I actually felt like I had some flexibility in my schedule, like, I didn't want to subject myself to that because I felt like that was enough. That was a lot. That took up a lot of time, and it requires so much of oneself enough. And if I get, like, an intensive sort of down mood, I think, what would I do with all that extra energy and time that I give to this disease, you know, this, like, chronic illness that isn't really going anywhere? So I think that's where some of my issues come from with the whole scheduling thing, but I've made peace with it for the most part in my mind.
Well,
I think that's where it stems from.
It's interesting to hear you talk about those struggles and also the sense of, it sounded a little bit like isolation or alienation that you felt in Taiwan. And in my experience, it's rarely people who are entirely happy and who are in the right place in the world and especially well-adjusted. Those people aren't always reflective enough to make good poets. And it might be connected to what we were saying earlier about introversion and extroversion when we were talking off mic before.
I hate to admit that, and I mean, it sounds sort of grim. I don't know if that's entirely true, but I do feel like that, you know, that feeling or the way that we process the world and filter our experiences, if we feel like an outsider, I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, living in, you know, Southeast Asia for a couple of years or like when I lived in Germany. It can just be, I mean, to be honest, when I came back to Wisconsin and I felt so different. I felt like people didn't understand, and even my family and my friends, people that I knew for a long time. And so I think it can manifest itself in different ways, and poetry is a way to sort of heal that, you know, feeling of disconnection or I don't know. It's like it's a kind of loss in a way, and so it's given me perspective, and it's helped me in ways that I can't really express right now. But yeah, it's been a journey, and I know what it feels like.
right.
to be the outsider or to not feel understood. And it's funny, like, it sounds weird. Like, one of my favorite poets is Tony Hoagland, because he's so funny. And I'm like, I'm not really funny in my poetry. But one of the things that I missed, you know, living in Taiwan was my humor didn't translate. Like, their humor was so different from our humor. And I thought I was funny, but it, people didn't get it. And I can't explain to you, like, how depressing that is. Like, because that's a big part of me. And to feel like you're not coming across or something like that was really a challenge. So I kind of took to writing as a way to say the things that didn't come across on a daily basis living, you know, as an expat in a different country.
Interesting. Well, I think people at home would love to hear an example of one of your poems. But before we get to that, I have to play a public service announcement. So if you'll just sit tight in your soundproof booth, which I appreciate you finding for this phone call, and then I will play that quick PSA and be right back to have you read a poem.
Okay.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My guest is Amelia Grace. She's an internationally published poet and English instructor who we are reaching in Milwaukee, Wisconsin this afternoon. And when we come back, we're going to hear an example of her poetry. On KDVS 90.3 FM, this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
The Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019. Or via email at root@lugod.org.
This afternoon, we're listening to the music of the Adam Mankiewicz Trio. This is the music of Jerome Kern, as some of you might have recognized. This is a Kern and Hammerstein track called Who. My guest is Amelia Grace. She's a poet who lives in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. She's also spent a lot of time teaching overseas, especially in Taiwan. She's an activist in diabetes awareness, and she, along with her family, created the Ray of Hope Foundation, which raises money for diabetes awareness research and a cure. So, Amelia, before we hear whatever poem you've picked out, we've talked about a little bit about some of the inspirations for your own poems from your biography, from your life. And you mentioned Tony Hoagland, but who are some other poets who have been especially important to you or who one might hear as influences in your verse?
It's a good question. I've been thinking about that and a bit reticent to give the answer because I don't want my work compared to theirs. But I really love Margaret Atwood's poetry and even like, you know, Generation X poets like Chandel Beers and Louise Gluck. She's been a big inspiration of mine and even my thesis advisor, Janine Hall Gailey. As much as you try to cultivate your own voice, you know, you hear like bits and pieces of that.
Well, we've had
two own work.
Yeah. I was just going to say we've had two of those women on this radio show, Chandel Beers and Margaret Atwood.
The last one I want to mention is just John Cady, who is a professor here at UWM in Milwaukee. And, you know, I fell in love with his poetry because of the way that his, I just like reflects this way of thinking or being in the world. And I just, every time I read his stuff, I just think, what a beautiful mind. He just won a big award for his book, 95th Street. And I can't say that my poetry is like that, but I look to him for inspiration, I guess you'd say. So those are the ones that come to mind off the top of my head.
Excellent. Well, that's an excellent list. Great. Do you want to say something about the poem that you're about to share with listeners of this radio show?
Sure. Well, I don't know if it's interesting, but the funny thing about this poem is that I had started it with a friend of mine a while ago, and, you know, bits and pieces of it. It was like a different poem, but I was looking at the poetry journal called Tattoo Highway, and they have this contest. Basically, you write a poem based on a photograph. And so it was one of those poems that never really went quite where I wanted it to go, but I knew that it had potential. And so I felt like the photograph was what I needed to get it to where it ended up. I think that it's finished or close to being finished. I just wrote it early this morning, so it's you know, it's kind of a new one with bits and pieces of older stuff mixed in.
Excellent. So, well, I'm curious to hear it. What's the title?
The working title is Elegy for Flora and Diego.
Excellent. Whenever you're ready.
Okay. Elegy for Flora and Diego. Dirt, birds, skyward, a stone's unblinking stare, taking in the now and the then, whites woven together with red in a circle face down on the glossed wood of the desert plain, where old men like Diego talk of having loved. Their long-tongued lies unfold over eyeballs, looking not like that stone in a bucket of water from a lone stream, a trickle like lovers rolling upon each other at dawn. They end up leaving like Flora and Diego, worn down pairs of shoes and brushes caked with the colors of memories, half painted, soliloquies, toes up, in caskets underground.
That's beautiful. I had a chance to read a version of that poem very close to that one earlier today and really enjoyed it. Do you want to say something about its immediate inspiration?
You know, I'm a happy person, but I feel like there's a sadness there, and I just kind of took the lyric or the narrative bits of it to sort of capture the feeling I had in the moment. And then, like I said, that photograph from that Tattoo Highway sort of, I don't know, brought it all together. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, it's a departure from the type of poetry that I normally write, but I feel like I'm still there in it. And I think that's what I liked about it, was that it was both very much me and somehow different from a lot of the stuff that I wrote. And I liked that.
Excellent. Good. Good for you. Well, if you're just joining us, I'll remind you that Amelia Grace is my guest this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. She's a poet from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and she has spent a good amount of time teaching ESL to Taiwanese university students. When you think of the arc or the direction or a particular goal for the poems that you're writing now, are you working on a collection? Are you working on poems that are thematically or topically connected? What do you see as the larger projects in which the poems that you're writing now might fit?
That's a good question. I just finished my MFA in poetry, and so I did, you know, I did compile a collection of poems sort of loosely based around a theme.
Right.
But what I keep coming back to in all of the poems, and I know this probably sounds cliche in some ways, but it's this notion that poetry heals, and that it's a sort of introspection that appears in my poetry, whether it's, you know, a poem like about Hansel and Gretel or something like the one that I read that in some ways is an imagined narrative based on a photograph, or if it's something that comes from my own experience, like, you know, poems from India or China or here in Milwaukee. And, you know, it's been, I would say it's been a rough few years for me. Like, I've come a long way in a short amount of time, and I finally decided to take the poetry seriously. And so it's really the first time that I've looked at, like, how they all sort of tie together and what can come from that. So I feel like in many ways I'm at the beginning of my career as a poet, even though I've loved it for such a long time. So I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Absolutely.
But, it's a work in progress.
And it must be such a sense of accomplishment with the MFA behind you to have created that book and to start thinking about new audiences, new projects, and to have already reached that personal benchmark for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it really was the first time that I thought about how the pieces work together as a whole. And so, like, even though my MFA thesis is, you know, represents some of my best work, I felt like a lot of the stuff, you know, I had to leave out because it just didn't really work, but that gave me so many more ideas for the future, and I just feel very encouraged by all, you know, all that is out there, and I've finally gotten over the feeling that I suck as a poet, you know, like, for so long I was afraid that to write anything, like, I would self-edit because I thought that, like I said, the more I learned, the more I read, I would compare my rough drafts to, say, Margaret Atwood's published poems, you know, Morning in the Burned House or something like that, and think, God, this is awful. And I finally realized, like, just to have the courage to begin, that's where you start. And then you go from there, and to give myself permission to start as imperfectly as you do with stuff like that. And it actually was John Cady who I spoke with him, and he told me that it took him, gosh, like over a year to write one of his poems. I mean, it's a long poem, The Constructor,
right.
But still, like, it framed it in a way for me where I thought, all right, I don't have to get it perfect the first time. If this amazing writer takes a year to create a poem, maybe I can begin to, you know, do my best and, you know, like, edit as it goes on.
And you can also forgive yourself to do whatever it is you're doing.
Yeah,
towards your own creative
we're our own worst critics, don't you think? I mean, yeah, I think that's really the case. And I just had to get over myself and realize, like, well, what's the worst that could happen?
Right.
Somebody thinks it's bad or have to fix it. I mean, you know, just putting it out there means a lot. So that's kind of the place that I start.
Well, that's good. It's certainly a place of bravery and now of accomplishment as well. Do you have one more short poem that you could share with us before we let you go?
Sure, sure. Let's see. I'll read this one called Reasons to Stay. It's a relationship poem that I think a lot of people can probably relate to. So here goes. Reasons to Stay. Because it is night, because we fought today, because it is raining, and rain is a reason to stay alone inside. I recline the old lazy boy, sides stuffed with yesterday's crumbs, pen caps, the loose forgotten change that isn't mine. All the unknown things we lose hide in obvious places. One copes with helicopters by choosing a bird to listen to. I invite the outside in again, a fight you never win, refusing opened windows when it rains, a habit carried over. Even then, I could feel the air and know if a storm were coming or not. The difference essential, like our fights. The subject, same as always, historic. Let's forget all that for now, okay? All I want anymore is simple. To putter with you in the last streams of sun, clear and shattered. A slow notion of narrow and half-light, determined by aperture and sanity at too long intervals. Anger is made stranger by self-editing. Suddenly, the sun's a stone. To forgive you each day is my ritual. There were least words, thaw, taut water. Everything wants a narrative. All I ask is that you make me laugh.
Oh, that's very nice. I like your last line, and it reminds me of what you were saying before about laughter and how difficult it is to spend time in a place where your attempts to elicit laughter fail. I guess you'd have to put it in that people are not catching the jokes that you're making.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm really drawn to poets that can make me laugh, like Tony Hoagland or Matt Cook, who lived in Milwaukee for a long time. And I'm very much kind of not that way in my poetry, but I think I'm funny in real life, so maybe that makes up for it. But, yeah, thanks for letting me read. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed it. And, Amelia, do you have any websites or fundraisers or anything else you want to direct listeners to with regard to your advocacy work in the diabetes community?
Yeah, well, just real quickly, I know, like, breast cancer awareness is everywhere right now, but we have, November is kind of the month for diabetes, and the website for the foundation is rayofhopefound.org. And people, you know, who don't live in Milwaukee, when we do a fundraiser here in the city, can donate. And, you know, all the proceeds, really 100% of the proceeds go to funding a cure for type 1 diabetes, which I feel like we're close to, like we're almost there. And they can also look for more information on my own website, which is just ameliagrace.blogspot.com, and there's links to other things there as well.
And let's remind people that...
One of those things, like, if you don't have diabetes or don't know someone that has diabetes, it's hard to sort of care about it. But to be honest with you, it's one of those diseases that is so rampant. And I often call it, like, the Rodney Dangerfield of diseases because it doesn't get any respect. Like, because people just think, oh, don't eat that donut, or, oh, you just don't have sugar, or, oh, just, you know, lose weight. And that's really not the way it is. And more people are faced with it. So I don't mean to be a downer. I just mean to say that, it's a worthwhile cause, and I hope that people check it out or do what they can in their own communities, because I think it's one of the biggest health issues facing Americans today, and it's one of those things that seeps into your life sort of slowly, but when it hits you, it's usually too late, and that's the sad part about it.
Definitely. Well, Amelia Grace is my guest, and she spells her first name A-M-Y-L-I-A, Amelia Grace. You can Google her if you want to find out more about her work as well. Amelia, it's been such a pleasure to get to know you over a couple of phone conversations, and especially this one on the air when you could join me on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you. I appreciate the chance to talk with you.
Absolutely. Enjoy your concert, and I will see you online.
All right.
Take care.
Good evening.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS. I have some tickets for Michelle Norris. I'll be giving those away in a couple minutes. Also, Eric Crowell will join us. Stick around. Speaking of health issues, Subway reminds us that in today's world, blood donors are carefully screened to prevent the transfer of disease, and disposable needles are used to protect the health of the donor. So please, give blood generously so that others may live. Donate blood at your local hospital or blood bank. This important reminder is brought to you by the concerned staff of Subway inside the Walmart in Dixon. They may be reached at 707-678-4501. They're on the air because they care about the people in our community.
Strategies for taming stress. Simplify your life. Relax. Learn to say no. Do the unpleasant things early in the day so you don't have to worry about them. Schedule rest periods, and finally, learn to laugh at yourself. Multiple sclerosis, or MS, is a chronic, unpredictable disease of the central nervous system. To find out more about the National MS Society, call 1-800-FIGHT-MS or visit www.nationalmssociety.org.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. I mentioned earlier that I have tickets to see Michelle Norris a week from tonight on October 6th at the Crest Theater in Sacramento. Michelle Norris is the co-host of NPR's All Things Considered. She has a new book out. She's an accomplished speaker, journalist, and author, and would certainly be a treat to see her at the Crest Theater. I won't be there myself because I'll be seeing a poetry reading starring Doreen Jeanette at Bistro 33 in Davis as part of the ongoing Poetry Night reading series. Doreen Jeanette is the author of a brand new book of poetry, and if I remember correctly, an award-winning book of poetry. And she's also, more recently, a realtor here in the city of Davis. Doreen Jeanette, she'll be joining us all in the city of Davis at Bistro 33's Poetry Night a week from tonight on October 6th. So you've got two choices, but I wouldn't blame you now. If you give me a call right here at the studio, the number that we're using is 754-KDVS. That's 754-KDVS. Give us a call, and you could win those tickets to see Michelle Norris on October 6th at the Crest Theater. We'll be right back with Eric Crowell here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Eric Crowell is my next guest. He's a graduate from UC Davis with a BA in English, and he specialized in creative writing. Known primarily as a fiction writer, Eric Crowell has been known to write a poem or two in his time. He's been living and working as an English teacher in Seoul, South Korea, for the last year. His fiction tends to revolve around his family and individuals who make horrible, ill-conceived decisions, but who are nevertheless good people at heart. Speaking of such a person with a heart of gold, ladies and gentlemen, here's Eric Crowell. Eric, welcome for the first time to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Andy.
Absolutely. So we were talking with Amelia Grace in the first half hour about the difficulty of living overseas. She was teaching English in Taipei, Taiwan, and I'm wondering about the extent to which you have reacclimated to your California lifestyle. I saw you soon after you deplaned here in the city of Davis at a poetry event, but I'm wondering, are you back to your old self in your in terms of your California dreams?
For the most part, yeah. Since I've gotten back, it's just been job searching, and that's been a bit stressful, but things seem to be going all right. I have a few interviews, so.
All right, good. Well, I hope that something comes of that. Certainly it's impressive to have taught English in Seoul for a year. How much Korean did you pick up while you were there?
Enough. I was nowhere near fluent. I spoke enough to order at a restaurant and say what I wanted and get directions and give directions in a cab, but I was nowhere near being fluent or able to actually have a conversation.
What was your relationship like with your students? Did they welcome you? Did they give you a hard time? What was your teaching life over there?
Well, I still remember the first day at my school. I walk into the cafeteria to have lunch. I wasn't allowed to actually be around the students too much because they were worried I might have bird flu and kill everyone.
Right.
But so I walk into the cafeteria and just all of the female students just start screaming at the top of their lungs like I was the Beatles, and it was quite an ego boost.
I'm sure. So it wasn't a scream of fear because of the bird flu epidemic.
Except in Korean.
But. Right. And this was because you were, a tall Caucasian American visiting?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Okay. Well, well, there you go. So that must have been pretty fun. Though I think that'd be tiring after a while if the rock
star status died pretty quickly.
Yeah. Sure, I can see that.
Just a normal teacher.
Now, as a normal teacher teaching in Seoul, Korea, to what extent were you able to prioritize your fiction and to a lesser extent your poetry? And did you mine all of your teaching overseas experiences for material for your stories? Or did you find that your imagination sent you back stateside?
The writing I did do tended to be about life in America. Most of my creative writing is based on people watching, and I see someone do something and I wonder why, and I write about why they're that way.
Right.
It's very hard to people watch because anywhere I went, I stood out and everyone was curious, and so it made it very difficult to observe people.
So people pretty much just watched you then?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's some table turning for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, what? So you were working on projects that were mostly reminiscent of home. Did you find that your style had changed at all? In part because of some of the topics we were talking about in the first half hour, whether it be isolation or distance from home or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I definitely. The few things I did write there were poetry about loneliness and feeling isolated. But, yeah, it definitely gave me a much stronger appreciation for the other, both just in reading and then I'm hoping now in writing that I'm starting to be a little bit more proactive back home.
Right. Good for you. Well, what have you chosen to read for listeners this afternoon?
I have two poems and, if there's time, a selection from a short story I'm working on. My first poem is titled The Mountains of Northern Seoul. Seoul is kind of a horseshoe-shaped city, and in the middle there's a mountain range. I was living in the northeastern end of the city, and I could see the mountain range quite easily from my apartment. And so one evening I wrote a poem about it.
Excellent. Let's hear it.
The Mountains of Northern Seoul. From here, I can see the central mountains of Seoul, the spine separating the northern parts of the city from itself. It's been 10 months. Sitting on the ground, the railing feels like a cage, but I'm something to be displayed anyways and monitored so I don't become invasive. A wet summer of creeping moss, a timid and abrupt fall, a winter that leaves the tears frozen to your face, and a spring that brought a quick thaw. And still I don't know the names of these mountains, or my neighbors, or the street I live on. The mountains are black, a black that seems unimaginable in a city of neon. The smog-filled sky glows dim orange and outlines the mountains' profiles. I want a metaphor, but I can't see it. There's a mountain range whose name I don't know and whose contours confuse me. I would know these mountains, but it's too late now. It's dark, and I cannot see the mountains before me.
It's interesting how whenever my in-laws come to town, they have lots of questions about the topography, the agricultural output of Yolo County. And I feel like I have to do some research just to not sound like I'm woefully ignorant about where I live. But for you, it was probably somewhat more difficult seeing that you couldn't really read the street signs.
Mm-hmm.
So good. I like that one. Do you have another one there?
Yes, I have one more about my grandmother.
Okay, great.
Also
let's hear it.
Nature-themed. Sunset on Lake Shasta. Her hand is firm as it encompasses mine, but old, the wrinkles, grooves of wisdom. Her other hand holds a cigarette, occasionally raising it to knowing lips. The doctors told us later that the smoking led to elevated blood pressure and heart disease. I don't know this. The smell of burning tobacco is comforting. Against my mother's explicit wishes, I would walk out onto her patio and sit at her feet as she smoked and stared at the ancient oak and pine surrounding her, telling me stories of a grandfather I would never meet. We're crunching on through the underbrush. The light is dim and growing darker. I stumble on rocks unseen, roots hidden. The ground teems with short falls. Her hand tightens on mine, engulfing me completely, giving me the support I desperately need to keep from stumbling. We summit just in time to catch the end of the sun's descent. We sit and watch as the sky bleeds crimson hues, the clouds, ineffectual gobs, absorb the colors. Flawed bandages, failures, then the sky goes black, and the stars dance with mirror images glistening in the lake. Her hand never held the same strength, her voice the same certainty after the heart attack. But in this moment, she pulls me close to her, her hand pressing my shoulders against her, and throws her coat's edges around me, and we ignore the coming cold of the night.
Very nice. What does your family think of your creative output? Those last two poems, I bet you could share with them, though you've got some other fictional pieces that you might hesitate to. What has been your family's response to your work?
My parents aren't big lit people. My dad only reads historical books, and my mother pretty much limits herself to detective fiction. So they usually just say, well, that's pretty, but I don't really understand it.
Well, maybe it's time to delve into some genre work and and really impress them. Great. So what are your plans next, Eric?
Well, right now I have an interview ongoing with a technical writing firm in Wisconsin, which would be nice. And if that doesn't work out, I'm looking into seeing if I can get tutoring and attend school to get my teaching credential.
Excellent. Do you know where in Wisconsin you'd be?
Really close to Madison.
Well, Madison's a great town. I don't know if you've already explored it. But a nice place to live.
Yeah, it looks quite beautiful.
Yeah. Well, Eric Crowell, we're just about out of time, but I'd like to thank you for sharing a couple poems this afternoon. And I hope that when I have you in the studio later on in the fall or the winter, we can get you to read some of your fiction on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
That'd be wonderful.
Excellent. Have a good afternoon, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Everyone, you're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. If you'd like a crack at winning those two tickets to see Michelle Norris read from her new book and be interviewed on stage of the Crest Theater in downtown Sacramento on October 6th, then give me a call here at the studio. The phone number is 530-752-2777, also 754-KDVS. This is KDVS in Davis, and we'll be right back with the concluding words of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thank you. Congratulations to two of my hipper listeners in Sacramento for winning tickets to see Michelle Norris. That's a week from tonight, October 6th, at the Crest Theater in Sacramento. I'd also like to remind you that none other than Doreen Jeanette will be reading from her new book on that same evening at 8 o'clock at Poetry Night at Bistro 33 in Davis. I'd like to thank my guests this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, including Amelia Grace, who joined us from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and Eric Crowell, a graduate from UC Davis with a BA in English, who is now a creative writer. I have one last important message to share with you, and then I'll be signing off. Here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, an important message beginning now, he said suavely. The dental office of James Sanderson, DDS, reminds us that due to the AIDS crisis, blood banks nationwide are operating on very thin margins. So if you've donated in the past, why not stop by your local blood bank and donate again today? Bring someone with you. You'll both be glad you did. This important reminder is brought to you by the concerned staff at the Dental Office of James Sanderson, DDS, in Dixon. You may reach them at 707-678-2078 on the air because they care about the people in this community. Thanks very much to all of you for tuning in this afternoon to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. I'll be back next week with more poets as well as some technology wonks. We've had some requests for more wonks on this show, and if you want wonks, then wonks you shall have. So tune back in for this, and meanwhile, keep your dial right here at KDVS, 90.3 FM in Davis, for some great music coming right around the corner. See you next week.